couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some new films, The Upside, A Dog's Way Home, Replicas, and The Sixth Friend. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring mid-90s and an evening with Beverly Loughlin. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
In the news, there is no news in a lot of ways. Just as, like, the government is shut down, apparently Hollywood is shut down in a certain way. The Oscar host is not happening right now. There is still no host for the Oscars. Kevin Hart still is off the job, no matter what Ellen DeGeneres has to say. And it actually looks like the Oscars are going to be going forward with no host. And this has actually happened before, about 30 years ago. I believe it was in 1989. And people are sort of clutching their pearls saying, oh my gosh, how can we not have a host for the Oscars? It's an award show. You have an announcer. I actually support, in a certain way, the idea of not having a host for the Oscars if they do it the right way. The problem that the Oscars have, and everybody says this every year, they're like, oh, well, Oscar viewership's down. Why is that? Oh, it's because everybody hates Hollywood and they don't want this politics, or they want... No, the reality is people don't watch three-hour ceremonies anymore. And I've been saying for years, make the ceremony like 90 minutes. Cut out all the fat and the fluff and the goofiness and the garbage that you don't need, and the presenters presenting presenters. Get rid of all that. Do a streamlined presentation. Part of the problem with the Oscars and part of the problem with having a host is the host has to have these bits, and they have to have these monologues, and they have to have this montage and these moments and these elements where they did songs and music. Make it a shorter ceremony. Hollywood is so driven by ego that they've got to have these award night monstrosities. And I get it that from the standpoint of being on the ground on the red carpet, you want to have the glitz and the glamour and you want to have an event, but people don't watch 3-hour shows anymore. I mean, you barely get people to sit there and watch to the end of the Super Bowl unless the game's close. So why are people going to watch a 3-hour ceremony for the Oscars? And the other thing that happens is people like check the scores online throughout. So you really should have a streamlined process, and not having a host should do that. But I actually think it's going to end up tipping it the other way, and it's going to become even longer and more bloated in this process. I think you should let Kevin Hart have a crack at it. And I think he's grown from this, and you can sit there and complain. And I know, and I have friends that still have an issue with some of the things he said, and I do not support at all what he said on Twitter and a lot of the homophobic statements he had, but you can grow and you can get past that. And again, these are just statements. These aren't things he's actually doing. Sort of like if you go back to the James Gunn stuff, James Gunn wasn't really raping people and confessing it on Twitter. He was making jokes, bad taste jokes, but they were jokes nonetheless. And same thing with Kevin Hart. Was Kevin Hart beating up his son because he thought he was a homosexual? No. It was a bad joke and in a bad taste, and I think Kevin Hart, he should have the opportunity to grow and get past that and learn that that sort of sentiment is wrong. He shouldn't be then barred from doing any work whatsoever in the rest of his life. At least the Critics' Choice Awards has a host. Taye Diggs is going to be hosting that. I get a vote in that. You can check that out on Sunday night at 7 o'clock on the CW. See whether or not anything that I've been talking about over the last year, stuff like Black Klansman that I've been really pushing to hope to win awards, see if that actually wins. Taye Diggs at least gets to host that. That's Sunday night at 7 o'clock. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that and how the Golden Globes from last week leads into the Critics' Choice and then leads into the Oscars, and how what happened to the Golden Globes in terms of the winners can affect the winners in these other award sets. But overall, I'm getting so tired of opening up my newsfeed and seeing another thing about so-and-so is involved in some controversy that's really not a controversy. Like this latest thing about Peter Farrelly, the guy who directed Green Book. He's, of course, the Farrelly brothers. He did stuff like There's Something About Mary and Dumb and Dumber. So he's done mostly just these stupid, raunchy comedies, and now he's doing an award-worthy film. And there's this thing where apparently he would run around and try and get people to look at his junk. This was apparently a thing back in the early 2000s, like right around the turn of the century. It was like the joke was to flash your genitalia at somebody and get somebody to look. And it's sophomoric and it's stupid and it's inappropriate. But it sounds to me like he talked about doing this. This sounds to be sort of like the culture on a Farrelly Brothers movie. Not that it was like targeting specific people. It was just anybody. And that's where I look at it as saying, well, is this really harassment? Is it harassment if you're doing it to everybody? I guess that's a good question. And it also it was a broad, was almost public thing that people were doing. It's different if, I'll give you a great example. Like what's going on with, like what happened with Louis C.K., what got him in trouble was him just, you know, doing things that he should have been doing alone. But he sort of like went to people secretly and asked to do this. That seemed a little bit creepy. That's where it's almost predatory. But if he just went onto his show and he says to everybody, he's like, hey, I'm going to go in my dressing room and this is happening. Anyone want to join me to check it out? I think that that falls on a level of more performance than it does predatory behavior. And yeah, if Peter Farrelly's flashing his junk at Cameron Diaz, but he's also flashing it at Ben Stiller and Matt Dillon, who was also on There's Something About Mary, is that really harassment or is that just kind of what he does to everybody? You know, sort of like, you know, the creepy guy who gives everybody hugs and it creeps out the women, but if he's giving everybody hugs and he's hugging the guys and he's hugging the old people, he's hugging the young people, he's hugging everybody the same way, maybe he's not targeting the person. Maybe some people are overly sensitive. And that's the big problem with things like this. If I worked on a Farrelly Brother movie back in the 90s and I didn't get flashed the junk of Peter Farrelly, I probably would have been offended at that. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two real quick movies I want to hit. One of them is Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Opens on March 22nd.
Something unexpected has come up.
There's much more explanation coming, but I have this one shot. Just thinking about it's got my heart racing.
Bernadette?
We'll never guess what happened. She disappeared. Bernadette. What?
She didn't just vanish. I'm gonna get my gear.
Oof.
This is apparently based on a book. It actually looks kind of like a sweet, warm little movie that offers something positive. And I like Cate Blanchett. I think the big thing that surprised me were the people involved. Cate Blanchett, you got Billy Crudup in it. And it's directed by Richard Linklater. And I generally don't like his stuff. Well, and let me rephrase that. I said that to my wife because she mentioned that he directed this. I said, it's not that I don't like Richard Linklater's stuff. I don't like the stuff that he originates and he finds too dramatic. All that like Before, After Sunrise, Sunset garbage. I find that pretentious nonsense. I thought Boyhood was pretentious and awful. But stuff he kind of pulls from an existing source material, like when he did Bernie, I actually thought that was kind of a sweet little movie. And so I actually think maybe because Where'd You Go, Bernadette, maybe he's going to be honorable to that. So this one I might actually like, in you know, even though I generally don't like Richard Linklater's stuff. The other one I want to hit really quickly is Little, which opens on April 12th.
Take it to Boss Lady's on a warpath this morning. I'm money.
Every morning. I really think I could help this company if you just gave me a chance.
Just concentrate on being my assistant.
Were you always mean? I wish you were little.
What in the black Jesus?
How did you go from this to this? You went to bed grown and then you woke up little. That's for white people because black people don't have the time.
This is one of those person turns into a young person, an old person turns into a young person, sort of a Freaky Friday type thing, only with one person. 13 going on 30 was the reverse of it with Jennifer Gardner several years ago. And this looks like it could be funny. It could have some laughs. It looks like it's not terrible or it's going to be the worst movie of the year. It's going to be one of the two. It's going to be like a little surprise or it's going to be just flat out terrible. And the funniest things are in the trailer. You know, we'll see what happens once we get past the trailer. We may not get a screening for this, but, you know, we got to wait a couple months. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Sixth Friend and Replicas.
Stop it now.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the show and jump right into the movie reviews. The first one I want to hit is a smaller movie, and that is The Sixth Friend. Several women go on a retreat in a cabin to get away, but are haunted by a crime from their past.
Joey, it's been 5 years.
Yeah, you don't think I know that?
We are all moving on, and I can't let you get left behind.
Something's wrong. He's coming. He's gone.
Help me! This is actually released by The Asylum, and I'm making a point to say that because The Asylum is generally known for knockoff movies. I remember when they did Pacific Rim, when that came out, they did one called Atlantic Rim. And they're known for doing the Sharknado movies. I remember they'll sometimes repurpose movies. There was a movie when 2012 came out, that one about the end of the world in 2012, which came out in 2009, I think. They did a movie that I think they just repurposed the name of it. It was Apocalypse Movie, and they called it 2012 Apocalypse. And originally, The Asylum is known for just knocking off blockbusters. In fact, if you want to, the new Mystery Science Theater, the Gauntlet series, the one that they released just this past Turkey Day, they have one of their movies. I think it's Atlantic Rim in that lineup. And you can see how terrible some of those movies really are. I mean, they're fun for what, you know, it's a sort of that low budget crap. But yeah, The Asylum made a name for itself knocking off major blockbusters. This one's not that. And I give The Asylum credit because The Asylum has done its own standalone movies. And some of them have been actually okay. You know, some of them are, you know, they're all low budget, sure. But these are movies that they're actually attempting to make a serious horror movie, for example, as opposed to knocking off an existing horror movie or making a joke. Like the Sharknado movies are not to be taken seriously at all. So the basic story in this is there's a group of women and they get together, they're friends, and I was trying to figure out how old they are because the women in the movie, I think the actresses are, there's certainly some of them are in their mid to late 30s, but I think they're supposed to be playing younger in this, at least in the beginning where they're all at a big party and they're drinking and they have a guy show up who brings drugs with them, like a hallucinogen, like LSD. Then he attacks one of the women and then they kill him. That's sort of like the setup. It's really murky how that actually happens at the beginning because it only shows little bits of it, but there's something that happened or the police get involved. And so when they come back together, they're all sort of revisiting, each other trying to overcome this thing that happened months or years ago. And they're sort of trying to have a weekend in the cabin together. But of course, then the haunting of this guy who they think they killed in the past is coming back to them, and it turns into sort of that stalker, serial killer, or slasher type movie, Somebody in the Woods. It's an okay idea. The problem is it is a little bit punishing. I've never been a big fan of horror movies that seek to just strictly punish the characters where there is no hope of them escaping. I don't find that interesting because just watching people, innocent people, or even allegedly guilty people, as in this movie, getting hurt, that doesn't turn me on. That doesn't get me excited to see a movie. I mean, if you want to see innocent people getting hurt, just watch the freaking news. That's something that it's just a little bit too real, and to me, there's no dramatic element to it. So that's one of the things I don't like about this movie. The other thing is I don't like the characters. I think some of this is improvised. And you guys really got to be careful with improvising dialogue, especially when there's no purpose to it. So it's all these women getting together and drinking and going, woo, yeah, let's have some tequila, woo. And that's kind of half the lines are, woo. And at a certain point, I'm just like, oh, these people are awful. There's no depth to them. There's no character to them. They just sort of make them these very one-dimensional friends of this sixth friend or whoever this person is. It's trying to spin off the allure of faux celebrity elements because, of course, after this incident that happens at the very beginning, they have all been interviewed and they get their own shot at the limelight and sort of a entree into reality television and entertainment. and it has trying to say something about that, but it just really has trouble sticking to that message and figuring out what that message is and how it is going to deliver it in the midst of this sort of stalker slasher horror movie. There are some interesting twists to it, which I appreciated, but it kind of came a little bit too late. I give the Asylum and the filmmakers credit that they were doing something original and something that was not a knockoff on a blockbuster. But overall, the movie certainly was lacking some more substantive elements and was otherwise just sort of like working with cardboard characters, even more cardboard than your typical slasher film. So I'm going to have to say The Sixth Friend kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about replicas. When his family is killed in a car accident, a scientist clones them to be able to live with them again.
William,
something's not right with me. Tell me the truth.
There was a crash. You and the kids died. I brought you back.
There is a reason human cloning is banned.
I'm dead.
We stole millions of dollars worth of bionine equipment.
I hope you're ready to go to jail.
Those three subjects are our property.
This is a movie that came in completely under the radar. It's distributed by Entertainment Studios, I think is what it's called. The biggest movie that I've seen from them recently was last year sometime. I think it was in the spring or the summer, that hurricane heist movie about the people trying to rob the bank in the middle of a hurricane. That movie I remember going to see on a Thursday night, and it was a completely empty theater. So I don't know if Entertainment Studios really has the ability to release a movie yet. It's interesting that it's got Keanu Reeves in it. What's funny about his career is he does some big movies like John Wick, you know, and he's had big movies, but he also has these small little nothing movies that come out. It's almost like he's saying, I'm going to do a major movie with a studio release like John Wick, and then I'm going to do a Nicolas Cage movie occasionally just to sort of keep myself real and grounded. It's a shame they didn't screen this. This week they didn't screen this or A Dog's Way Home, which is nothing to be surprised about in January. They never screen stuff in January anyways. But Replicas was a movie I kind of was interested in seeing. I watched the trailer. I'm like, this actually looks kind of cool. And not like it's going to be a great movie, but it reminds me of the kind of movies I'd go see when I go to these 24-hour science fiction movie marathons when I was a kid. And they'd show it like 3 in the morning. And you'd watch and be like, oh, that wasn't bad. I think that's kind of an interesting movie. They still make these sort of crummy, under-the-radar sci-fi and horror movies with major players in it, and they release it in theaters. They don't get much play. And this is a movie that I think that maybe if it had come out in the 80s, it would have maybe gotten a little more traction. But, it looks interesting enough. It looks like it falls into a lot of cliches, but I kind of want to see it. I have to say, I kind of want to see it. I don't know what else to tell you. This one looks kind of cool. But unfortunately, they didn't screen it, which means it has to get a preemptive suck because that is how the world works.
It sucks.
That is it for these movies. I'm going to be talking about a couple more movies in the next segment, The Upside and A Dog's Way Home on Fat Guys at the Movies. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Upside. A quadriplegic billionaire hires an ex-con as an unlikely caregiver, starting a unique and friendly relationship.
All right.
Penthouse.
You need to wait your turn.
Relax, it's not a holdup. Just sign this one, please.
How would I sign it?
I don't know. Slowly? Wait, don't your arms work?
They don't.
You can move your mouth.
As can you. I need assistance.
How much does it pay?
You are not qualified for this position.
Oh. The buckle!
He was rich as Jay-Z?
No, richer.
This movie is based on a true story, but it was also a French film initially a couple years ago called The Untouchables. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it in French, because I don't know how to speak French. But that movie, I remember when it was hitting the awards circuit, it was getting a lot of buzz. I never got a chance to see it. But what's funny about this is they were planning on making this movie, and I had heard somebody told me that they were originally going to do Colin Firth and Chris Tucker, which is like a good and the bad. I mean, I love Colin Firth, but I think Chris Tucker would have been a mess. Not having seen the original movie, I don't know how well this lives up to it. But it's funny, when this thing was getting ready to come out, just, you know, even just this last week, there were people out there, if you looked at the ratings on like IMDb, people were tanking the ratings. And this is one of the problems with ratings that aren't verified whether or not you saw the movie, is anybody can go in and rate a movie 0 stars or 1 star, I think is the lowest you can give on IMDb. But you don't have to prove you've seen the movie. It's not like you can rate it based on having bought a ticket. Sort of like if you go on Amazon and you read reviews and ratings of books, you can't rate a book unless you actually have verified purchased it, like a Kindle book or something. And that sort of keeps an honesty to the rating system, because anybody can go in there and you can rate under different names and you can use a different screen name or username. There's a lot of ways to game that system. And what was happening is people were rating The Upside as like 1 star. It has a really low rating on IMDb. And it's by people who hadn't actually seen the movie. And the most common thing I saw people saying is they're like, this movie already came out. Why are they remaking it? Just go watch the original, deal with the subtitles. And that garbage is spewed all the time. I remember when the movie Quarantine came out, which is a horror movie. It's an outbreak, sort of like the super rabies that happens in this apartment building, and these firemen go in with a news crew. And it's kind of almost like a zombie flick, only it's, they have super rabies is what they have. That's based on a movie called Rec, which is a Spanish film. And I remember saying to somebody that I liked Quarantine, and you got the initial, I like the original Rec. Why did they even have to remake it? Well, this is the way the world works. In America, even though there is no official language, most people speak English. That's the norm. If you want to release a movie in America and actually get people to go see it, you've got to make an English language version of it. And that doesn't mean dubbing it. Rec was a minor blip on the box office in America. Why? Because it's a found footage movie in Spanish. You had to read subtitles and keep track of what's going on in the movie. But then Quarantine came out, and it's almost, I mean, as much as you can get with a found footage movie, it's kind of almost a shot for shot remake of Rec. But it did so much better. Why? Because it's in the language most people speak and understand. There's nothing wrong with saying, I don't want to see a movie because I don't like reading subtitles, because I have trouble reading the subtitles and catching the action, especially something like a found footage movie that has so much stuff happening, and all the subtitles, half the subtitles are like, oh, help me. Oh my God. Oh my God. You know, it's very hard to watch that. Similarly, if you wanted to make a movie for the French audience, you're going to want to make a movie in French. You don't want to release a movie in English. Now, I mean, a lot of the Hollywood movies export because they're the biggest budgeted stuff. But when they get exported to other countries, they'll dub them. Everybody doesn't read subtitles everywhere. A lot of people will want dubbed movies. And that's okay. And that's the way it is with The Upside. There's nothing wrong with remaking a popular movie or a good movie, but giving it an English language treatment. So I'm not going after it. The other thing that's with this movie that has been an unnecessary controversy has been this shaming of Bryan Cranston for playing a quadriplegic. I mean, there have been people who are like, well, he's really an ableist. You know, he actually can walk. He shouldn't play. There's plenty of quadriplegic actors out there, and that may be true. But he didn't cook meth in his own Winnebago. But he played a guy who did on television. You don't have to cast that stringently. I think there's nothing wrong with having an actor who can walk play an actor in a wheelchair. I think it's fine if you have an actor playing in a wheelchair doing a role. That's great. Let's do that as well. And if you happen to have an actor who's good enough to play that role, great. But that's a stupid complaint about The Upside. So there's a couple of my complaints about what's going on. It's completely valid for Bryan Cranston to star in The Upside. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. We're talking about The Upside, and I was just complaining about, you know, people. So it has to be, and you go see the original French movie, and Bryan Cranston can't play a guy in a wheelchair. Both of those statements are wrong. Let's talk about the movie itself. This is a, it's sort of one of those fish out of water comedies, and it's a relationship comedy, but it's between a man and his caregiver. And if you've done any sort of caregiving, and I've done my fair share of caregiving, there's elements of this movie that are also very funny. Now, granted, Kevin Hart's known for comedy. He's known for the broad humor, the obnoxiousness, and that's all good. This is not the kind of comedy he does. It is reactionary comedy, like when he first has to change a catheter or deal with that, or even just getting the guy into the wheelchair. I've done caregiving like that, and it can be frustrating, but it can also be very funny at times as well. And Kevin Hart does a good job with that in this movie. And I give Kevin Hart credit because it looks like he is trying to grow as an actor. He's not just doing the obnoxious, fast-talking characters that you're used to seeing him as. He's doing stuff like this. He's doing fish-out-of-water comedies. He was doing, he did Central Intelligence. He played kind of the straight man to Dwayne Johnson's more crazy version of his character. This is him getting a little more dramatic. Now, it's not fully dramatic. It still has some humor to it. It still has him doing his Kevin Hart thing. But it's an attempt to do something more, and that's good for him. Grow as an actor. Become a different artist. That's wonderful. And actually, the chemistry between him and Bryan Cranston is quite good. I give him a lot of credit for that. Having not seen the original, I don't know if this is surprising or not. It certainly seems to try to avoid certain cliches that we'd otherwise have in a movie like this. It's not about making Bryan Cranston's character rediscover life. It's about connecting to him. So it's a little more subtle than some grand reveal and some big gesture. And they do kind of fall a little bit into corniness at times. But overall, I mean, the interaction between Hart and Cranston is very genuine. And that's one thing that Kevin Hart, if he's given the right person to work with, like he does with Dwayne Johnson, like he does with Bryan Cranston in this movie, and unlike what he did with Tiffany Haddish in Night School, because, and I said this last week when I was talking about the Blu-ray and revisiting that, they're too similar of characters. Their shtick's too similar. He's able to play off of Bryan Cranston, and Bryan Cranston, of course, he can move his head. Bryan Cranston in this movie can move his head and his mouth, and that's it. And that takes some acting chops on that. Is the movie a little bit corny? Does it push the buttons? Is it a revelation? No. But I mean, it does have this level of been there, done that element to it. But that's never stopped Hollywood from making movies. Overall, I thought this movie was sweet. I thought this movie's heart was in the right place. I thought this movie was surprisingly funny and refreshing to see. Now, I do want to at some point go back and see the original French movie, but, you know, just taking sight unseen as the English language version without having to fight against the stupid controversy that's happening around it, I have to say this is a decent movie. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for the segment. I was going to talk about A Dog's Way Home this segment, but I didn't have time because I was talking about the controversy with The Upside. So we're going to pass that on to the next segment. We're going to be talking about that and this year's Golden Globes, the box office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring mid-90s and An Evening with Beverly Loughlin. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with A Dog's Way Home. I was not able to do this in the last segment because I was talking about outrage and people upset about Bryan Cranston not being in a wheelchair and people not wanting to watch foreign films. People are so crazy sometimes. Anyways, let's talk about something that has less to do with people and more to do about fluffy, furry animals, and that is A Dog's Way Home. From the writer of A Dog's Purpose, this film tells the story of a dog separated from her owner and her journey home to find him.
My name is Bella, and this is how I met Lucas.
She does seem to really like you.
Maybe that's a sign her home's supposed to be with me. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
we're together.
Life with Lucas was the best, but when he wasn't around, I missed him so much.
Hey, there's a duck.
It looks like she needs help.
I can't tell where the journey lay.
I was very far from home, but I knew Lucas was waiting for me, and I had to go and find him.
We've seen movies like this before and stuff like, you know, the Incredible Journey. They tend to be fun family movies, but one of the problems that just off the front of this movie that doesn't sit well with me is there's a narration that goes on with the dog, Bella, the character of Bella. You hear it in the trailer. That's Bryce Dallas Howard doing the voice, and that's fine. I actually like Bryce Dallas Howard. I like her better than her doppelganger, Jessica Chastain. But the thing is, using the dog telling the story, which is how the book is, as I understand it, is fine for a framing purpose, but you got to be really careful with that stuff because it does fall into a level of corniness that makes it at times unappealing to me. I understand why they did it with the dog's purpose, because in a dog's purpose, they had Josh Gad doing the narration, and the dog literally reincarnates several times, and so having the same narrator, that helps the connective tissue and the through line of the story. You don't need Bella to narrate the story, but I think it makes it more accessible to a younger audience. So at that point, it gets a little bit overly cheesy with the one-liners that the dog keeps throwing out. Not in a campy sort of way, but just in an overly cute sort of way. It reminds me of that movie that came out, gosh, about 5 or 6 years ago called Walking with Dinosaurs. And it was a really neat CGI dinosaur movie, but they added like dialogue with the dinosaurs and it made to kind of skew it younger. And it just kind of ruined the effect because I kind of was like, oh, this is kind of a neat, authentic feeling dinosaur movie. Oh, now it's making a fart joke. Okay, there we go. But while this doesn't devolve into that, the dog's way home works to a degree when it has the dog. And that's the way it was with the dog's purpose. I could care less about the people. When the dogs were on screen was when I was interested. And there's a lot more of that. The problem that then I have with the movie is there's so many of these animals that are CGI. I mean, this movie has more CGI animals than Star Wars does. And I think they did that because of the dog's purpose. There was a big controversy that there was a stunt with the dog and people thought the dog was under duress and under stress. And that kind of marred that movie. Well, this one, I think whenever there's any question, they put CGI animals. But it's not a big budget, so the CGI animals look like they came from about 2002 rather than 2019. And I mean, stuff like they got a cougar in there at one point, and that makes sense for a mountain lion to be CGI. But then when they have this CGI cat at the beginning, the cat and the dog nuzzle, and I'm like, well, you can train a dog and cat to do that. I just think they went the easier route. So the CGI gets a little in the way. And I mean, there's certain things where the story does seem to pander a bit to the sort of flyover country. Where it's like, okay, we're going to make everything. Like, for example, they make the characters, Ashley Judd plays the mother of the guy who adopts her, the dog. And she's a vet and she's having like depression issues and she's always at the VA. So they have that sort of subplot, but they never fully explore it. And it just seems kind of tossed in there because they go, this will do well in the red states if we throw in vets in the VA. That plays well with the heartland. So that doesn't seem genuine. The more they stick with the dog, the better I like the story. But overall, it's a cute little movie. It's worth seeing for family audiences, definitely for younger audiences too, because they make such an effort to make the dog cute. So I'm going to have to say A Dog's Way Home kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I want to hit really quickly about the Golden Globes before we hit the box office. The thing with the Golden Globes, I was stunned that Bohemian Rhapsody won for Best Picture, partly because it's not a drama, it's a musical, and it wasn't in the musical category. For that matter, A Star Is Born, the front runner in that category, was also a musical, but it was in the drama category. That was a surprise that Bohemian Rhapsody won, but I think it's kind of an interesting thing. This is what happens when you don't have a front runner. We don't have that one movie that's gobbling up all the Best Picture nominations that's definitely going to win everything. And then you spread out the votes and you get some interesting blips. And I'm curious to see what ends up happening when we finally find out if this affects the voting in the Critics' Choice Awards, because we could vote for those well to the beginning of the weekend post Golden Globes. That can also affect the nominations for the Oscars, which opened this week and closed next week. I mean, literally the Oscar nominations didn't even start being accepted until after the Golden Globes. And there may be a backlash against stuff like Bohemian Rhapsody, and there may be a front lash, I guess you would say, for something like A Star Is Born, felt that it lost a little bit because it didn't win any major awards, that it might get, a bit of a bump in the nomination categories. We'll see what happens as that plays out when the Oscars actually go through. But still, check out the Critics' Choice Awards this Sunday on CW at 7 p.m. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office really quickly, because running out of time very, very quickly. But Aquaman won last weekend. That was not a big surprise. But what was a big surprise was that Escape Room did quite well. It made almost $20 million, so it was nipping at the heels of Aquaman. And Aquaman's probably going to dip again this weekend. I don't know. It could lose half that box office number. It could still get about $15 million. It could still top the box office, but it's going to have to be fighting off stuff like A Dog's Purpose and The Upside, which are right around that level of performance, 10 to 15 million. We'll see if that happens. It's going to be not a very exciting weekend for box office because there's really nothing big out this week. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. There's not a real big movie that I want to highlight. I'll play a trailer and talk a little bit about An Evening with Beverly Loughlin, because that is out on DVD and Blu-ray. And it was a weird enough movie that warrants a revisit. A robbery goes awry when the suspects are wrapped up in seeing a performance by a mysterious local celebrity.
Welcome to An Evening with Beverly Loughlin!
There's an event tomorrow night at the hotel.
An event?
Remember the man in the plaid hat?
Mr. Beverly. I don't know what this event is, but Lulu's gone missing.
Drive!
Can anybody hear me? I'm trapped under the ice. Who is Beverly Loughlin?
This movie is off the wall. It's off kilter. It's absurd. It's bizarre. And it's different. It reminds me a little bit of those movies that, like, Jared Hess would do. He's the guy who did Napoleon Dynamite and Gentlemen Broncos. I like that sort of very weird, strange delivery. And I know that's not for everybody, but this movie is, it's sort of like, it's almost exists in the real world, but it doesn't. It has some interesting performances by, like, Aubrey Plaza, Emile Hirsch, and also Craig Robinson as Beverly Loughlin. But what makes this movie kind of fun is its absurdity and weirdness. And if you don't like absurdity and weirdness, you may not enjoy this one. But I have to say, it caught my attention. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other movies that are out this week, we have a 20th anniversary of Office Space and a 30th anniversary of When Harry Met Sally. So, you know, if you really want to feel old, you can realize that those movies are adults now. Some of them are pushing away from childbearing years at this point. There's also The Purge Season 1, which is, of course, the TV show they made based on the Purge movies. And Castle Rock Season 1, the tribute show to Stephen King. And finally, the other big theatricals that are now available on Blu-ray and DVD include Hellfest, which I still haven't gotten a chance to see, very much a Halloween movie about a violent carnival that is real, and then mid-90s, which I absolutely hated. It got a little bit of love in award season. Jonah Hill's tribute to street skateboarding culture from, as you guessed it, the mid-90s. And that is it for this week. I need to take off. Next week, the big movie I'm going to be talking about is Glass, M. Night Shyamalan's follow-up to Unbreakable and Split. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.